Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Leadership Focus, an internet radio show geared to everyday leadership, both at work and throughout your life. Each week, we present you with new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be an incredible leader with a more balanced life. I'm your host, Lisa Pasbjorg, executive coach and CEO of Focus Coaching, a leadership coaching and training firm based in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Tonight our topic is A View from Within. What does one hospital's chief medical officer have to say about the evolving effects of the nation's new health care reform? Our special guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Driggers, chief medical officer and vice president of Network Physician Services at Holy Family Memorial in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Dr. Driggers received his MD from the University of Illinois, and he completed a residency in family medicine at the University of Illinois Methodist Medical Center there, where he was also a chief resident. He is board certified in both family and emergency medicine, and he's a fellow in the American College of Emergency Physicians. He's received numerous awards and honors throughout his long and professional career, and I'm really honored to have him here tonight. Welcome, Steve.
Thanks for having me, Lisa.
Thanks for coming. I'm pleased to have you. It's really exciting. Well, Steve, I have to ask you, after all this time, what was your first reaction once you learned that a healthcare reform package had been passed?
A mixture, I think, of relief and disbelief, if that's a
yeah.
compatible combination.
Yeah.
Relief that we could stop talking about what ifs and start talking about what it meant. Unfortunately, I don't feel it's become a lot clearer in many areas. I think we need to be careful that we, for the greatest part, this is probably more about health insurance reform than it is about true health care reform, at least the current bill.
At least this part.
Yeah,
this
at
wave.
Least until we see how they do some of the quality indicator reforms, but that's a little unclear, I think, to most of us yet.
Yeah, yeah. So after that initial reaction, have there been layers? Have you had sort of additional thoughts, additional ideas, or is that kind of where you're at now?
No, I think now I'm one of the few probably idiots in the country who bothered to read most of this act, which if I couldn't read really quickly would probably have been a lifetime job. We're in the process now of going through all the pieces of the act and writing it into areas in which there are, as I think any business would do, what are opportunities, what are risks, and what are long-term risks that we need to be prepared to make decisions to either partake of the opportunity or not. And that's, taking a group of three or four of us to spend time going through each of that and then figuring out how you prioritize your actions in response to what you think the government's going to do over the next 3 to 4 years. And how can you meet the needs of the people who are going to come to you with certain expectations of coverage?
Sure, sure. So when you say we, who are you talking about?
In this case, we've got a group of the senior leaders and the people who, a chief financial officer and our chief innovation officer, my chief nursing officer, and myself, basically the people who are going to have to deliver services to people who believe that healthcare reform has given them access to healthcare they did not have before. And we have to figure out what does that truly mean and how do we survive under what we believe will probably be a significant risk to most healthcare facilities. If they dump 32 million people who have not truly had healthcare into a system that was already suffering from a lack of primary care physician access, and you're going to dump them into a Medicare payment mode, this becomes a significant risk. Medicare in the state of Wisconsin, at least, pays us probably anywhere from 75% to 80% of cost, not charges, but cost, Even if they take Medicaid and bump it up to Medicare, that still means that half the people that come to see us pay us less than it costs us to provide the care. So what happens if all of a sudden you've got a 10 or 15 or 20% increase in your volume of people who are seeking that care?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and of course, I know that, and people that are listening, and there are many people that are listening that are in healthcare, I'm sure, know that. But I think people outside of the healthcare world have no clue how much of the work that comes in, the business that comes in, is reimbursed at below cost. And that doesn't even include all the things that are lost in the shuffle, that, you know, the wrong code couldn't be billed, you know, something. And that's just staggering, the amount. So one of my questions I was going to ask you was, what are the challenges that you and the hospital have had to deal with, kind of the biggest challenges over the last 5 to 10 years or so, and then how that looked now, how that changed now? So, you know, maybe you could back up a little bit and fill us in on sort of the historical picture and then what's different.
I think Holy Family, we've been lucky in a serendipitous type of way. I wish I could tell you it was due to great wisdom and purposefulness, but I think it was sometimes in response to local stimuli. But we have anticipated the government's movement in certain ways. One, the necessary integration of physician office practice, hospital care, outpatient care, and a continuity of care kind of mode. So we have an employed physician network. There are other methods and models to do that, but basically I think this clearly makes the case that care is not hospital related anymore. 75-80% of everything we do is outpatient anymore. The number of patients in hospitals as inpatients have markedly decreased. Three-quarters of our surgeries probably 5 to 10 years ago used to be inpatient. Three-quarters are now outpatient. Most of our surgeries go home the same day. And the number of inpatients staying are fewer, but they're sicker. And yet, despite that, we've managed, like a lot of other places, to decrease their length of stay. Our average length of stay in our particular institution is a little over 3 days for all comers. That's including all the outliers. So I think there's been a huge... I'm sorry?
How does that compare to the rest? I mean, to what's average or typical?
The national average is somewhere around 4.5 to 5 days.
Oh, that's a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously there are places that have it shorter than we do, and some that have, you know, our tertiary care centers and have it much longer, and obviously it depends a little on your patient mix and your demographics. But,
oh, sure.
But still, it's been a significant change for us, and we've anticipated, I think, that fact that the government's going to reward those who keep people out of the hospital, that do outpatient observation care, that have integrated delivery systems with physicians, pharmacies, home care, hospice, and can deliver a product. I believe that, you know, there's a piece out there called accountable care organizations that basically what the government wants to do is contract to give you one set fee for an episode of care. So if you have an episode of pneumonia, from the time you're diagnosed or begin the symptoms to 30 days post-admission or post-event, they're going to pay us one set of dollars, and we have to divide that dollars among all the people who give care. That's difficult to do unless you have an integrated physician network.
Yeah. So is that the same as, or is that different than the concept of bundling?
It's a component of it. Bundling is... Okay. A bundling can be more of procedure. So you could bundle the care.
Okay.
But a true event of care could be a congestive heart failure admission, for instance. But you bundle all the charges and all the fees, but then there has to be an overriding entity that is going to figure out how to get the efficiencies so that everyone still comes out okay on the amount of dollars being paid, and the government comes out ahead from the standpoint of increased quality and decreased cost.
That sounds like a big challenge. 32 million is a huge number.
Yeah. I think the other piece that, you know, in a everyone's heard about it, but I think we have been a little bit ahead of the curve, and I think a lot of people are going to be challenged by, you know, the concept of electronic medical records, of integrated information systems to get both efficiency of care, to reduce duplication of efforts and testing, and to maximize patient safety. And I think we anticipated that and are ahead of that curve. So, you know, there's a meaningful use criteria out there that the government's put some money in a pot for those who can meet these meaningful use, and hopefully we'll qualify for some of that. I think a lot of places will have difficulty if they are just now starting that process.
Yeah, I understand there's a lot of money out there that occurred, that came through before this healthcare legislation that was early on. I did an interview about a month ago with Dr. Pat Hinton Walker, and she's on the government task force working on this whole thing nationwide. Very interesting stuff. But money that came through beforehand, and a lot of money. So hopefully it will be done well. And it's nice to know that there are resources. So often there are mandates and inadequate funding for mandates. What about the challenges that we've heard about for a long time with, you know, the levels of nursing staff available, especially retaining nurses, obviously the aging baby boomer generation, the expectation that they're going to need more health care. And now, of course, in the last few years, I'm sure you've been aware of this much longer than the general public, but hearing about the predictions in physician providers and alternative providers, PAs and nurse practitioners. What about that? How will that affect you? How do you see that being a part of what happens with the healthcare reform?
Well, I think it will be a challenge. You know, I think different areas will face different challenges. There's been a relative nursing shortage. There's an increase in numbers trying to go through the system now. I think the major challenge for the nursing standpoint is going to be a change in their role in mm-hmm. inpatient. The system will probably not survive if what we have is simply a nursing who function under the same ideas that the current ones are struggling with. I think the nurse of the future, who's going to be a benefit to the system and to the organization, is going to be a care manager. Mm-hmm. They're going to be someone who can help the physician organize care with, be another valuable clinician who can help us make sure we use the right protocols and pathways and processes, that can oversee other lesser levels of care, who share the responsibility for quality of care and patient safety and customer service, and use other people at lower levels of care, medical assistants, nursing aides, whatever, to render the hands-on care. A lot of the nurses aren't going to like that. They went into nursing because of the love for their hands-on care, but I think there's going to be a different type of levels of nursing that people are going to have to choose, and I think where we're struggling a little is to get that kind of care manager. You know, I think we will be short in 5 years significant numbers of primary care physicians. I think that will mandate the increased use of both physician assistants and advanced practice nurse practitioners, and we begin contracting them just like we contract physicians. You find a good one who is going to give care to a population of patients in tandem with the physician. You contract them so that they're here and the patients can count on them and we can count on them. But that will be the only way to meet the primary care access, is to create, you know, and I'm going to use a word here that I hate to use, which is medical home. But in my concept, a medical home is really a team of people who then cares for a population. Everybody from a physician who sees the sickest to the nurse practitioners and PAs who see some of the standard routine checks and wellness checks, to educators, to people who call and remind them about their appointments and their labs and, you know, help them with their exercise programs, and integrate wellness and prevention into the system. That that can't happen with the number of physicians we have. There's just not going to be the time. So I think a wise system is figuring out a way to integrate those providers and the nurses into care teams, whether in the hospital or out of the hospital.
Yeah. Let's take a little break here. Let people know who we are. If you're just joining us now, you're listening to the Leadership Focus radio show. You can listen to us live on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern or download the show to listen later. I'm your host, Lisa Posbjerg, and tonight we're talking with Dr. Stephen Driggers about healthcare, where it's going, and how he sees it as a chief medical officer from the hospital that he oversees. So back again, I'm thinking about, as you're describing this projected inadequacy in numbers of particularly primary care physicians and primary caregivers and the nurse manager role and all of that, it all makes sense to me. And I heard you say the nurses are not going to like that, or some of the nurses are not going to like that for reasons that you described. But what about the physicians? Are they going to like that?
No. Most of them won't.
And
I don't win a lot of friends with this, but I think they've started to do it. And I'm not an expert on medical schools anymore. I just know what I read and talk. But you know, the physicians we've chosen, myself included, for now have been chosen for certain characteristics and certain abilities. And I think the physicians of the future will have to be a different set of qualities. They're going to have to be certainly the technicians. I mean, the good surgeons and people, and the people with the three-dimensional hand skills are still going to be there. But there's going to be a need to be an ability to find data, to know how to use electronic systems, to look and research data quickly, to ask specific questions regarding patients and find the best answers, and coordinate other care teams. They're going to have to have that concept of team and less the concept of seniority. Certainly there's a captain of the ship phenomenon that will always occur, but I think it will be much less hierarchical in nature, mm-hmm. if we're going
to
make this work.
Those
are qualities that have to be chosen for. And, you know, I think mm-hmm. a lot of physicians who went into this field with certain understanding of what the job was and a feeling of certain promises made, and I think they're going to have a hard time adjusting to some of this.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a hard time adjusting to electronic records, you know, the feeling of, why am I spending
sure.
my 5 minutes, Steve, putting these orders in when, you know, someone else who's lesser paid could do this? Well, the answer mm-hmm. is because your 5 minutes improves patient safety and cuts 20 minutes out of the entire
right.
system. That's not something they like to hear a lot.
Yeah. Interesting. So one of your jobs, it sounds like, is really, it's about the physicians, helping the physicians make the adjustments that they need to the changing environment, leading physicians forward, modeling the attitudes that you want them to have. What kinds of things are important in physician engagement and retention? I know that's a big concern for you.
I think first they have to trust you and trust the system you set up. I mean, if they believe you're not playing fair with them in terms of black boxing their reimbursements or hiding things from them, nothing you do will work. Once you get past a sense of fairness and trust, which I think has to be clearly outlined and clearly demonstrated over a period of time and has to be communicated from someone who's been there to someone who's coming in, there's a culture there of trust that has to occur. After that, you have to involve them. Engagement is giving them meaningful involvement, not just paying homage to, we'll have a committee and you can serve on it. They have mm-hmm. to have transfer leadership in some way, big or small, Maybe it's as small as leading the team in their office to help improve diabetic care. Maybe it's serving on a council that helps make decisions for an 80-man group. Different people will have different processes but and interests, but you have to do that for them. You have to also have a system set in place to recognize personal effort. When someone does a good job for either the patient care or for the system, you have to find a way to recognize both them and their teams. Retention of physicians, which is going to be more and more important to any group, it's hard enough to recruit, but retaining them is important because it's expensive to replace these, and it's unfair to the patients to have to readjust to
new
caregivers.
To bring somebody in.
Yeah.
And then the learning curve with adjusting to the culture and all those things, and then to have them gone in less time than it took to fill the open position.
Right, and that's,
heartbreaking.
No, it is, and I think, because of more and more physicians are becoming employed, they don't have the accounts receivable, the office staff, the equipment, the materials to tie them to a practice. So you have to give them something else to tie them. Fair reimbursement, treating them fairly is important, but and engagement. But the other is a sense of pride in what they're doing, a sense that they can do something here that they can't do somewhere else because the organization and the group supports them. And that you can measure differences, that, our care is better, our customer service is better, our safety is better. Something has to be a hook that lets them believe that their effects are having meaningful outcomes, not just playing the reimbursement game.
That's so true. I think almost every doctor that I've worked with has started out phrases or sentences about what it was that they were unhappy with about work, and it would start out, I didn't go to medical school for, and then they'd fill in the blank. But it was all value stuff. It would be about, I wanted to help people. I wanted to make people well. I wanted to be, almost I wanted to be a hero in some cases. But I really cared about being a good doctor. And I know that the general public is pretty cynical about people going into med school because they want to drive a Corvette and, they want to make a huge amount of money. And, I think certainly people that were anticipating making huge amounts of money, many of them have been discouraged in recent years. But I think the majority of doctors really, really wanted to make a difference in people's lives and have found it so frustrating to deal with bureaucratic red tape, some clerical person making a decision whether or not they can perform this procedure or not that would be ideal for the patient, or whether this patient can get this medication that's the better one, the lower side effect one, but not on the formulary. That kind of stuff drives doctors nuts.
Should drive all of us nuts.
It
shouldn't
does.
Be just physicians.
But especially doctors.
Yeah.
Because when they care, it really is hard.
Yeah. You have to give them a sense of clear expectations of what is valued by the organization and what will be rewarded both personally and financially. And you've heard me say this before. Everyone has one of these grids, and it's a new invention. But, we make it clear here that when you come to work, there's a grid. We ask you to look at every patient every day. Is what it is. What I'm about to do, promote patient safety. Is what I'm about to do, promote quality of care. Does it promote customer service? Does it promote respect for either the patient or for another caregiver? And then lastly, does it promote efficiency? We have responsibilities for all those, but in that order. And if you let people know that that's how the organization makes decisions, and that if they make decisions that way, you'll support them, they have a sense of shared values and of pride in the organization, and that they can make a difference. And it doesn't have to be that great, but you have to give them something concrete that they can identify with and be rewarded for. And I think that's probably what's more important. You have to pay them fairly, but,
But after that, it's being valued. It's doing something important.
I think you have to sort that even at the recruitment time. You have to make yourself You have to make them understand that this is a different organization they're joining. Whether it's my organization or someone else's, if every recruitment when you're trying to bring someone in is not special, if it's just business, then I mm-hmm. think you start off on the wrong foot with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that respect to them and giving them a clear message about what we expect is important here. If you don't share these values, then maybe you shouldn't come back for a second visit. You know, we give our contract on the first visit. I don't expect them to sign it, but I want them to read it, because I'm not going to bring them back for a second visit if they have a major problem with some portion of our contract, because every physician or organization has the same contract. The numbers may be different, but the provisions are exactly the same. That's a sense of trust that no one's going to, you know, be treated unfairly. And I think whether you're in medicine or whether you're in any other thing, I think that sense with an employee is what's probably most important.
And you set that tone right from the beginning.
I think you have to. I think it's too late to do it later.
Who we are. Mm-hmm. But you do that, and you do that well. And I think that that's really important and attracts some candidates to your hospital and your town in ways that nobody else could do in quite the same way. It's a very unique quality. I think the culture of the organization and what we're about comes through really clearly. And is, of course, people want to have some meaningful reason to come to work every day. Everybody does, and especially physicians. So that's really nice to hear. What positives do you see for the future in healthcare? Do you see things moving in a positive direction?
I think the intent of much of the healthcare reform is good, and I think to have that discussion that we're all in this together. I think the prevention and wellness features. I think the part that's probably not being that needs to be emphasized a little more is the shared responsibility. The healthcare system can't do something to you. It has to do something with you. And
yeah,
prevention and wellness is especially important.
I just put a quote in the beginning of my last newsletter from Toby Cosgrove, who's the CEO at Cleveland Clinic, about obesity accounting for 10% of the healthcare costs in the United States and smoking accounting for $100 billion. And we could provide a lot of health care if we didn't have these two big problems.
Yeah, no.
And encouraging people to be part of that, to take personal responsibility and a leadership role in doing that. So we're spending less money on dealing with sickness and keeping people healthy.
I think the other issue, quickly, is that I think that,
sure.
is that asking them is coming to an agreement in our country on what are the desired outcomes and how are we going to measure them? And if we can come to those agreements and we can learn to use pathways, protocols, evidence-based medicine, efficacy-based, whatever you want to call it, that's the battle a lot of us have been fighting for a long period of time. Is that, and again, you've heard this dumb quote, but, the fact that medicine is a science that can be practiced together and the art of it is practiced individually, one-on-one with your individual patients. And standardize the science is important, and I think when there's money behind it, rewards and takeaways, if you don't practice the science together, I think that's an important message of the healthcare reform process.
Thank you. On that, we'll end this. This has been great, Steve. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot. I think our leaders have some things to kind of sink their teeth into and think about in the future. I think it's been very balanced. I really appreciate it. Take
care. Thanks for asking for some of my opinions. I appreciate it.
Great. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thank you for joining us tonight on the Leadership Focus, the show which gives you new ideas, interesting guests, and actionable strategies to help you be a better leader with a more balanced life. We hope that you've enjoyed the show. If you have, please go to Blog Talk Radio, become a friend, and make us a favorite. To sign up for our free newsletter, With more tips and strategies, you can go to focuscoaching.net on the web. That's focuscoaching.net on the web. Until next time, this is your host, Lisa Posbjorg, urging you to be a better leader every day.